You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello and welcome to another fabulous episode of Dear Multi-Hyphenate. I am your host, Michael Kushner, and I'm so excited that you're joining me for this episode. Thank you as always to the Broadway Podcast Network, and thank you for listening. And if you could follow me on Instagram at Dear Multi-Hyphenate or at The Michael Kushner and rate, subscribe, comment this, this podcast, that would be very, very, very helpful. I'm really excited that you're joining me today. This episode is awesome. And there's so many incredible things happening in the Broadway TV film industry. So if you're able to see a show, please do it. I just saw Suffs at the Public Theater and absolutely loved it. I saw POTUS last night. There's just some really, really great, wonderful stuff happening. So please get out and depending on your comfortability, of course, see theater. Please do it. Moving on to this episode, I'm so excited to introduce you to Roman Molino Dunn. Roman Molino Dunn is an award-winning composer, Billboard charting music producer, and co-owner of Mirror Tone Studios. He has worked in film and TV and with GLAAD-nominated artists as well as Grammy-winning artists. It's a great conversation. We have two very, I think, different views about collaboration, which I think is really cool. I tend to put an emotional, point of view in collaboration. When Roman sort of takes a step back and you'll hear it in the episode. I think it's really kind of cool. I never looked at collaboration from his perspective. So I learned something, learned a lot of things in this episode, and I hope you do too. So enjoy.
And as every episode starts with your multi-hyphenate, I start with a quote, except I'm not very good at instilling, not tradition, but routine. So some episodes, if you're listening to this episode for the first time, if you go back, I say that I always start with a quote, but I don't always start with a quote because I'm a little bit of a mess in that way. But I do have a quote for this episode, and it is this one sort of rung, I guess for lack of a better word, rung out to me, sang out to me, because we're going to be talking about music and sound and creation. And so I came across this one, and it's music is the movement of sound to reach the soul for the education of its virtue. And that was said by Plato. And I am so excited to welcome my guest today, Roman Molino Dunn. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks so much for having me. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. What do you think of that quote? And I'll say it again. Music is the movement of sound to reach the soul for the education of its virtue. Does that mean anything to you?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's a heavy one to unpack for sure. I mean, sound and music definitely have reached my soul on many occasions, generally to find the virtues within. So I would wholeheartedly agree with that quote. I'm not even sure I have the capacity to fully unpack it. You know, like I said, it's pretty dense, but it certainly strikes a chord with me.
Literally. I love that. We're primarily talking about the creation of music today, which is really exciting because I feel like on Dear Multi-Hyphenate on the podcast, we sort of talk about how to approach art and, you know, and that's great, but it's sort of rare where I get to talk with a fellow artist about the art itself. Talk a lot about approaching it and preparation and organization and boundaries and things like that. But I'm so curious about producing music and the things that you have done. So I'm excited to go on this journey with you. What would you say your hyphens are?
Sure. Well, the two main things I spend most of my life doing creatively, and I guess professionally as well, are composing music for filmmakers. So television and feature films are the main things I do. I used to do a lot of commercials as well, but now it's more feature films and television shows. And then the other half of what I spend my time doing musically is producing for artists. And there's quite a bit of an overlap in the approach and even the mindset when you're doing either scoring to picture or producing a song for an artist, in the sense that you're making music for somebody else, essentially. And so when it's a film, the director is that somebody generally. When it's a song for an artist, the artist is essentially the director. I'm trying to help them fulfill their artistic desires through the musical skills that I have. So maybe it's less multi-hyphenate in the sense where it tends to be a similar skill set. But one of them is truly, a multimedia expression, you know, film and television, where I'm just one piece of a larger artistic puzzle. And then with, writing for an artist and producing for an artist, it's really just about that one piece of music. And it doesn't necessarily exist in a larger multimedia setting, although that's changing too. A lot of artists now, the music is just one part of their package. So those are the two main things I do artistically that I would consider my multi-hyphenate facets.
I love that. I mean, just because I'm interviewing you doesn't mean that you have to be a multi-hyphenate. I think what's kind of cool about this podcast is that the listeners can sort of decide for themselves how they want to apply these lessons, these stories, this type of artistry to their multi-hyphenate identity. So like I just had Lee Silverman, who's a Tony nominated director, on my podcast, and she's a director, and I think she does dabble in other things, but I have a lot of people in the who listen to this podcast that are actor, director, producer, so they could listen to those lessons that Lee said and add them to her director thing. So there are going to be people that are listening that are director, music producer, instrumentalists, you know, writers, etc., that will hear what you have to say and tie them. So can you tell me about the process of a music producer? What are the first steps on both ends? How does someone approach you, or how do you approach someone else?
Sure. So, music producer can mean a lot of different things to a lot of people. In my professional services that I offer, a music producer, I'm performing the role of creating an instrumental for an artist. Essentially writing the instrumental, writing the track, if you will, and recording their vocals, editing, mixing, mastering, the whole thing. I do what's called a song package service. So, for example, an artist will come to me and say, I need a few songs. A lot of times I'm working for reality TV stars, and so they tend to be multi-hyphenates as well. They're singers, but they're also on television. And they'll say, I'd like a song. I'd like a song that's kind of like this, or maybe they have an idea for a song. And so they'll tax me with creating the instrumental for them, and then they'll write the top line, as we call it, the vocals, and then they'll come into my recording studio and record it, and then I'll edit it, mix it, master it, and that's pretty much how the process of it. So it's a soup to nuts kind of job, if you will, being a music producer in this essence. There's other ways that people use the title music producer. And historically, it's had different implications as to what you'd be doing professionally. But that's kind of where it's all led to in my career.
That's amazing. So when you say someone writes the melody line or the top line for you, is that literally just like, they will literally be like, these are the vocals, this is how I want it to go, where they are responsible for coming in with like, with a guitar line, with a piano line, with a synthesizer line? Like, what, how much does one have to prepare before they can meet with you?
So most of the time, nothing. They don't prepare anything. So most of the songs I've done, I'll start by writing the instrumental. So I'll write all of the instrumental, every instrument, the drums, the synthesizer, the guitars, whatever the instruments are, a full track minus the vocals. And then I'll send that to them and they'll write their vocals to that track. That's generally the process that I've been using, but sometimes people do have like a demo, you know, maybe they are more of a musician and less of just a singer, and they'll play guitar and sing and they'll say, hey, can you turn this song idea into a full radio ready track for me? But that's a little less common because I tend to work more in the pop and EDM space. And like I said to you earlier, I do a lot for drag queens and reality TV stars. And that process is generally what I described earlier, where I'm writing an instrumental and then they're coming in and being inspired by said instrumental to write some vocals to it.
So you've done work on Drag Race, which is, you know, my favorite TV show. I've talked about, I've talked about Drag Race in multiple episodes before, and I've had Drag Race girls on the show. So in what capacity are you associated with Drag Race? Because I'm about to nerd out. So.
Sure. So, and I did see some of your guests on there and I've worked with a few of them. I saw recently you had Peppermint on. And so I'll tell you about a lot of work I've done with Peppermint because I've done a lot. And actually the work I've done with Peppermint's been it's been less usual. It's not always the process I was just talking about. And I'll get to that because it's really interesting, a lot of the stuff that she's doing. But I have pretty much every season, I think, maybe starting in season two, it might have been season one, I just can't recall. It's been a long time, right? But essentially, I've done songs for all of the contestants on almost every season. Not all of the contestants, but on every season, I've done a song for a contestant. So a lot of them have their own recording careers and put out music. And so they'll come to me and I'll do what I just spoke about for you. Although sometimes, like in this last season, actually it was All Stars, I did a song for Pandora. Like when she comes out on the runway, you know, she did a song called Ridiculous and I wrote that with her. And that song did really well because it actually rose to number two on the iTunes comedy charts because it was like actually a bona fide comedy hit in that sense.
Wow.
Yeah, so sometimes it's on the show, but a lot of times it's, you know, their recording career because they need to keep putting out content and music to keep their fans engaged once they're on the show. And it's not always Drag Race. I mean, sometimes like there's all these new drag shows like Queen of the Universe, right? I just did a song with Novazar on that show. And it's great because these drag queens are artists. I mean, that's what they're doing. They're creating great art. Sometimes it's comedic, sometimes it's meaningful, but whatever it is, they're very interested in, you know, writing music and providing content to their fans. So it's been really cool to go on that ride with all of them.
So when does it become art for you? When is it like, when can you separate the tedious efforts and the day-to-day things where you're like, okay, I just got to get those out? Because we all have them, I think, when we're all like, you know, my day typically starts with emails, just like weeding out all of the dumb, stupid emails that require like a line from me to respond, be like, yeah, got it, whatever, whatever. So, but then, you know, you move on to sort of the next part of the day where it becomes a little more engaging or a different part of your brain. When for you does music producing and music creating really reach the point of artistic of an artistic experience for you?
Oh, I try to feel that way the whole process, really. Yeah, I mean, running the business aspect of it, you know, so like just getting the contracts taken care of and the emails and all that stuff. Maybe that's a bit less artistic, but I try to remember that anytime I'm working on music, I should treat it as such, as art. And, you know, throughout my career, I've lost sight of that here and there and had to remind myself, you know, because maybe you're working on a song that you don't actually care for. And that's not actually your job to care for it. But then you start to realize how lucky you are that somebody is willing to collaborate with you or, you know, pay you to collaborate with them. And then once you reach that feeling of gratitude for what you're doing, I think it's immediately it immediately becomes easy to understand that this is meaningful and this is artistic and to get into that headspace. So yeah, I'd say I'd pretty much always view it as art, regardless of if it's like that song for Pandora. It was tongue in cheek. It was a joke, but that's the purpose it served. And she was doing something artistic. So I had to be in that headspace when doing it.
That's great. I have certainly been there where on, you know, as actors, we're taught to leave our baggage at the door. You know, if we're having a bad day, we have to leave it at the door, drop it, and focus on the scene or the rehearsal or whatever. Does that sort of apply to you as well? Like you have to drop everything, or what are sort of the unspoken rules of music production that maybe someone that wants to be a music producer doesn't know yet, or they won't know until they actually get in the room, but sort of what are the rules of thumb when collaborating for you that you can't mistake when you have your first gig?
Yeah. No, that's a great question. And I think I find it more in film scoring as a film composer than I do as a music producer, but that's just because of the nature of there being more people that you're collaborating with. But the rule still applies, which is that, and this is something I, you know, again, over the years, I had to relearn. I knew it. And whenever I was able to act upon this advice, that's when I had the best product always. And that is that it's not yours. And you should be okay to, you know, essentially scrap something and not be offended. So what I mean is, like, you need to write music that you love so much that you're willing to submit it, but not love it so much that you're not willing to change it. And if you just remember that, it's really hard. You know, like when I'm writing a score for a movie, it'll take me like 2 months to write something. And then somebody all of a sudden starts cutting it up and muting it and deleting it. And if you let that hurt you and take it personally, you're never going to A, enjoy the process, or B, be able to work with the same people again, because you're taking everything personally. And it's very hard because music is so personal. And once I realized that it's not my music, and that was a lesson I learned rather early on when collaborating, and it served me well. But again, you know, it's very hard, like you said, leave your baggage at the door. It's one thing to say that and to know it. It's another thing to actually act upon it.
Oh my God, I know. It's so hard. It's, you know, because when we're actually dealing with, you know, like something like COVID, right? Like when we were connecting before this, you know, we started, we were talking about how we're long haulers, you're having breathing issues, I'm having other issues. And you moved across the country to help heal. You know, that is baggage. These things are going to be affecting us for a very long time. And there's something interesting that you said that I think it's not that it separates the two of us in our approach to performance, but or to art. I didn't mean to say performance, to art. I try to use, while I'm leaving things at the door, I try to use those things that are affecting me to sort of inform what that creation is going to be. And you said before that it's not yours. I want to know when is the moment for you when it does become yours, when you can look back and say, that's mine. I created that. And the stakes are high because that's my creation. Does that ever happen, or you pretty much separate that?
Yeah. I think that's happened when I'm working not as a producer or as a film composer, but just, you know, if I've ever had time to write a piece of music for myself. But whenever I am working on somebody else's project, I try to remember that while I can draw on my life experience and treat the first expression of the music as something dear to myself, as soon as it's submitted, it's no longer mine and I shouldn't be touchy about it. And also, I mean, even in the beginning of it, it's really not mine. Like when I'm scoring a film, I'm reacting to somebody else's art, and therefore it's part of this larger piece of work, and it's not mine. I'm putting part of myself into it for sure. It's hard. It really is, because you have to love what you're doing. But again, you can't love it too much, essentially. And just removing the ego from it. I think it does come full circle a little bit, though, to answer your question directly, if there is a point where it becomes yours. I want to say when you do something and it's accepted, like when you're writing a score and the director says, okay, we don't need to change that one at all. And then you go, oh, well, that's mine. I did that all by myself, but you really didn't. You would have never done it if it wasn't part of the project. And the same goes for writing a song for an artist. It's all collaborative. I think when I was younger, I tended to think that I was an artist. And now I tend to think that I'm more of an artistic collaborator, at least in my job. I'm certainly an artist at heart, but when it's for work, it's not about me.
I love this insight, and I think it also protects the artist's self, because then you can leave that at the door. You can leave your baggage at the door and be able to focus on the task at hand without letting the ego get bruised. I think that's awesome. So when do you create on your own? When do you create, and it is a fully artistic experience, when are you inspired to do that? And do you get to do it often?
I do not get to do it very often. It's a good thing, really, because, you know, the dream was always to be a professional composer, whether that's a producer for artists or writing for directors. So that was always the aim. And so I don't need to necessarily explore things devoid of other individuals necessarily, because in doing what I do for other people, I explore such a vast variety of emotions that I wouldn't by myself. And so I actually almost find it difficult these days to write music without that seed. Like if I just sat down to write something for myself, I'm not sure I have as much to say without a collaborator saying, let's focus on this part of the human condition, right? It's that kind of dialogue that really gets me going artistically.
I love that you kind of said that you're happy that you don't get to, because that means you're working.
Yeah, definitely.
That's kind of a really interesting perspective on things. Because I love working. I love working. But I long for the times when I can create fully. And it sort of goes into the multi-hyphenate thing. People are like, how do I know when I'm a multi-hyphenate? Am I a multi-hyphenate? How do I figure out the types of hyphens to put in my identity? And I always say it's four things. It's are you in demand for it? Are you getting paid to do it? Does it bring you joy? And does that hyphen affect the others? And there are certain things that we do as artists that just bring us joy, or, and we don't want to make money off of it, or we're not into band for it, but it just brings us joy and we just want to create. And it's sort of, allows us to be a less judgmental on ourselves. Cause I think, you know, when I start to create and there's money on it, there's money involved. There's a price on it. Someone's paying me or commissioning me or something or hiring me. I get a little, in my head, was it what they wanted? Is it worth it? Did I do a good job? But it seems like the way that you approach art and creation and these collaborations is that by deciding already in the beginning that it's not yours, it sort of protects yourself from that.
Yeah, definitely. And it's even less about protecting, I think. It's about remembering the goal. And so the decisions that I'm making are, to your point of, is this good enough, right? I'm asking it based from what I perceive my client's perspective to be. So is this what they're looking for? Is this to some type of standard that we've agreed upon, you know, that's what's driving me, as opposed to is this what I would do? This as good as my taste is? Well, it doesn't have to be. It has to meet the taste of, like you said, who's commissioning you. And I think it actually protects me a little less, in the sense that it's like hurtful to see something killed that's really good. Like when you do something really good and someone asks you for the revisions, it really does hurt. And so collaborating in that sense puts yourself on the line. And again, but that's just why I have those ground rules that I set before. That's to definitely just to help me stay in line with what I'm trying to do.
I was going to ask you if there was ever a specific instance where you're like, all right, that stings, that sucks, where you were like, okay, this, I can't separate. Was there ever a time that you experienced that?
Yeah. And that was when I needed to remember, though, what, I mean, that is like the default defensive mechanism as an artist. And all artists are pretty much putting themselves on the line. You're exposing yourself, your feelings, your technique, your skill set, your life experience. And so as soon as somebody shoots that down, you immediately disagree with them as like a knee-jerk reaction. And you have to pretty much reprogram your subconscious in order to not have that reaction every time. But it sneaks back in. But there was never like a blowout or anything like that. I've been pretty mellow about that stuff. I think there is something to having enough projects that you're not sensitive about it. A lot of times I see it from, you know, either younger producers that work for me, or even some clients where this might be their first project, where they're very married to feedback and very touchy about things. And you just have to realize that that's where they are artistically, and it's okay. They're on a journey too. And so I never really get up in arms about it. It is what it, I mean, these people are paying you for you to have, do art with them. It's wild, you know, you just go for the ride.
Yeah, that's interesting. So when someone has a note for you, or when someone has a change, or do you pretty much just go, yes, and is that pretty much, or do you step in when you're like, look, I know, I totally get it. Cause in the headshot session with me, and in the studio with me, there are times where a client is hell-bent on making a decision, and I am all for that. Like, I want you to come guns a-blazing, prepared, ready to make choices. I love that, because then I can figure out, as opposed to me doing all the work, being like, okay, well, you know, whose careers inspire you? Like, who do you want to be? Is it an Idina Menzel vibe? Is it a RuPaul vibe? Like, instead of doing the work with them from the ground up, they're collaborating with me, and then I can grow that. But sometimes a client will make a choice that I am like, this, that cannot happen. That is not that is not going to go well in your favor. So do you step in and when you're like absolutely sure that your collaborator is like taking this in the real wrong direction?
No, never. I never.
Wow.
Yeah. It's their prerogative. I'm helping them with their art. So it's,
wow.
Yeah. Never. I think I've maybe when I was younger, I do remember like, no, yeah, that, yeah, no, I mean, I remember thinking it many times. See, I own a recording studio in Manhattan, and that's where I started producing for all of these drag queens and everything. And now I just own it now. I don't work sessions there anymore. But when I used to be in sessions, I remember thinking, why are you, you know, like an artist would do something, you know, like not tune a note or tune it, tell me to tune it poorly or do something that was just like, that's not good. Like your listeners aren't going to enjoy it. But I would never ever lobby, because again, I'm just trying to, if somebody's creative vision is god awful, you know, and I decided to take the job, I'm going to help them find that god awfulness. That's what I'm here to help them, you know, they want tools to help them find that. So I'm here to help people who can't do music or music production as well as I can to do what they want. Yeah. So that's always been my MO. I totally, feel where you're coming from. And, I actually have had a client actually come to me later, 2 years later, actually a drag queen who I will not mention the name of, who said, why did you let me do that? You know, this was the totally wrong direction. Why did you let me put out a song like that? And I explained that, you know, I just wanted to help you express yourself, and I can't be in charge of, you know, what that expression is, right? That's really not my place. And so that's always been how I've been about things. And I think it served me well in most cases. There's probably more room for it, the more successful you become, I suppose, where people are saying, you're the expert, I'm coming to you. Right. But in my experience, every time somebody's come to me and said, you're the expert in it, I want your feedback, I want this, as soon as you offer that, they realize they don't actually want your feedback. They just want your skill sets, you know, and so that's fine.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at suffsmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
Yeah, I have run into that where a client will ask me like for genuine feedback, and I'm like, and I was raised right, and I know, you know, you don't always have to open your mouth, you know, you don't have to always, even if it's true, you don't have to always say something. But I here and there, I will take the leap and I'll go, they're asking me for it and I'm going to give it to them. And they could shut down, you know, and it ruins the session. But that's also, you know, but I guess that's more my perspective on collaboration. It's like, if you're genuinely asking for my opinion, then I will give it to you. But I also, you know, and I'm not saying that you do this at all, but I think I really am afraid of leading my clients astray, because it's a visual, and the headshot is a tool to get them into the room. Then they could do all the mess ups. Then they could be a bad auditioner and fuck up. You know what I mean?
Sure, but sure.
My job is to get them into the audition room. So I think the stakes are a little higher for me in terms of I want them to do the right thing, because I've noticed that the headshot photographer is always to blame for a lot of things. I'm not getting called in for audition, so it's, I need new headshots. Whatever it is, there's a lot of different things and they need new headshots. My agent isn't getting me appointments. My agent isn't doing this. My agent hasn't emailed me back. I need new headshots, whatever it is. So I feel like there's a lot of pressure on me to help my collaborator, my client, because it's about a goal. It's not just about self-expression. It's about a goal. Sure. But I mean, you could say that creating songs with clients is about a goal as well. It's to create fan base, make fans happy, make more money off of it. I mean, what are some of the reasons why someone would come to you to collaborate? What is the end game? What is the outcome?
Well, so again, yeah, it depends if it's for a film or artist. So with a film, it's generally they need music for it to help express the content, the emotional content of a scene. And so that's usually what I'm doing there. And then for an artist, a lot of times it's they need more material, or they have a message that they really want to, get out there. Sometimes it's one and the same. But yeah, I mean, my goal is just to help them express themselves. And so it's the same with film, I don't really choose what type of music to put in the scene. Mm-hmm. I might choose how to manifest that and show that to a director, and then they'll give me feedback on it. Mm-hmm. But at the end of it, it's their piece of art, and I've just tried to help them discover it,
I love that so much. And on a technical element, when do you find that your client or your collaborator has the most success when you're done with collaborating? What are sort of the things that you have seen work the best? Like, is it a tool like social media? Is it utilizing a press representative? Like, what, when you're done, what are the next steps?
Well, sometimes nothing really. I mean, again, it's a little different between, maybe it's not. I was gonna say it's a little different between film and artists. But it's not always. Sometimes they, I'm a service provider and they have no commitment to include me in the next steps with it, right? And that's fine. That happens a lot, especially I'll do a film and then all of a sudden I'll find out it played somewhere, right? And it's like on TV. I'm like, oh, that's cool. That's nice for me to know. Other times I'll have worked very closely with them and they hired me specifically for my involvement. And in those cases, there'll be social media involved with it or doing like the last film I did was called Snakehead. It was a Samuel Goldwyn film and it was in movie theaters and, VOD and all that good stuff. And I did the whole press circuit, so all the podcasts and article interviews and all that stuff. And so I was in very close touch with the filmmaker there because we were on the team, so to speak. But sometimes when I'm just, producing a song for somebody, I'm not necessarily a featured part of it. It's just they want my skill set to help them. And the success there is to see them do well. And if they do well, I do well. And that's all good.
I admire your ability to sort of compartmentalize.
Thanks.
But that's not in a negative way, because I get emotional. I get emotional and I let my emotion, that's my Achilles heel, is letting my emotions get in the way. So I've been trying to be really good about not sending an email when I'm feeling heightened, you know, because yep. I know I will regret that 99% of the time. I have to go to sleep. I have to wake up thinking about that email and be like, okay, I'm feeling calmer. I can see more of where they're coming from, where I'm coming. And so I appreciate that the fact that you're able to just be like, I provide a service and then I let them be. And then if they want to include me, that's their prerogative. I think that is really admirable. And I think a really clear way to approach what we do. I think that's really awesome.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Of course. Of course. And I think we could all take a lesson from that. And I know I will be. I think that is really awesome. So you have two projects coming out, which is really exciting. The first one is AI Love You, and that's being released on Netflix on Valentine's Day. Can you tell us a little more about it?
Yeah, sure. I'm super excited about that one. I mean, that was a film that I do feel there is, you know, to your earlier point, do you ever feel like there's some of you in a piece of music? And this was one of those films where a lot of it was what I came up with, right? And I that's just an honor. That just and that was because I was approached by people who just liked what I do. And we all got along really well. It was just a really great project from that standpoint. And that's not to say that they didn't dislike some things I wrote and I had to scratch them and start over on certain scenes and all that stuff. And that happened all the time. But again, you know, you just remember, hey, I just want to make this better. It's about the movie. It's not about me. Right. And then you find something really awesome and you're really proud of it. So that's a film that was very unusual for me because it was an entirely different language. It was in, it's a film that's made in Thailand. So it's in Thai and I don't understand that language. And when the phase I was brought in was before subtitles. And so I'm scoring this film, not understanding the subtleties of the dialogue, but it was a rom-com and we had a very specific aesthetic for this film, which was this, it's kind of 80s synth wave, what you'd call it synth wave, but 80s, 90s, real cool. And so just leaning into that and playing on the actors who are just really strong actors, I was able to do it without subtitles. And then I got to do the final pass of the film with subtitles. And I was like, oh, wow, I really thought that was a sad line. It wasn't a sad line. And maybe there's a cultural difference in delivery. And I wasn't quite catching it. So that was an amazing project in that sense. Yeah, just really excited. They just, as we're talking today, the January 18th, they just released it on Netflix for the coming soon. So there's like that whole remind me thing now they have on Netflix where you can save things that are coming. So yeah, it just dropped and it'll come out on Valentine's Day. And then it's not going to be in theaters in the US, unfortunately, but it'll be in theaters all over Asia because of who's in it and throughout Asia, not just in Thailand, but in China as well. So really excited about that one.
Very exciting. And you have something else coming out as well.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's in the producing world and actually it just came out. So it came out on Friday. I produced Honey Davenport's new project, which is really cool because it's got a lot of other Drag Race alumni on it. It's got Manila and Lala Ri and Jackie Cox and
love Jackie.
Yeah, and Tammy Brown. It also has Kevin Evance, and I think that's it. I'm also on it. I got a feature on his songs. So,
you better.
Yeah. Well, I don't really sing on these songs, but sometimes when I produce songs, I'll get like a featured credit if they came to me for that. Again, that's just the same thing. Even though I produce all those songs, I'm only featured on one. And that's just because they wanted me on that track for my namesake. But otherwise, you know, I'm just providing a service. Anyway, that came out on Friday. It's doing really well. There's a few music videos that came out with it too. I mean, the Manila video dropped like 2 months ago as like a pre-release for it. Yeah. So really excited about that project. It's kind of, you know, it's that kind of good balance, you know, between dropping a film and dropping a drag album where it puts you in that headspace where you can take creative feedback and not get sensitive, you know? To your point earlier, I think having multiple projects in different realms helped me keep that level head when I get the inevitable feedback that something needs to be changed.
And that is a huge aspect of being a multi-hyphenate, is the fact that we can let our creative efforts grow and sort of blossom because we're using a part of our brain that isn't overly exercised when we sort of go from hyphen to hyphen. So if I'm producing, you know, a web series, it's and I'm away for like, you know, a week or so, I'm going to be so excited to get back into that photo studio because it's a part of my brain that I haven't exercised in a second. So that being away from our art sometimes and doing something else really helps. Not only do we spend time away from it and we miss it, but we learn lessons that help us. Just like in this podcast right now, like talking to you about separation and compartmentalizing and your sort of outlook on collaboration is going to help me. I never thought of things that way. And that lesson is going to help me when I'm back in the studio tomorrow or the next time that I'm going to be collaborating on a web series or a new musical or something. So I think that's really exciting. And there's lessons in everything that we approach, every person we talk to. And I'm so glad that we have this conversation today. Where can we find you on social media, Roman?
Sure. So I'm probably most active on Instagram, I would say. And my handle is electropointmusic. Or you could search my name, Roman Molino Dunn, but I've always had, you know, to your point of multi-hyphenism, I always had this split personality artistically, specifically using a pseudonym. There was a time where drag wasn't considered to be as acceptable for a musician, right? And so I did all of this drag music, but I was a classical composer first. And I was very, very afraid that directors wouldn't take me seriously if they knew that I was doing dance songs for drag race contestants. It turns out that's not an issue anymore. And people think this is actually really cool as it's part of pop culture and as it actually is the same as being in film and television, because that's what it is now. Mm-hmm. And so I used the pseudonym Electropoint. And so a lot of my social media was that, and I had separate accounts for Roman versus Electropoint. And right. That's that, you know, multi-hyphen situation, but they've kind of collided. And now I wear that with a badge of honor. And so my social media is Roman Molino Dunn, AKA Electropoint. I'm okay with telling film directors that I can do that, but I can also write very sad orchestral music too. Anyway, that's a really long answer for where you can find me on social media, but I thought it was pertinent to the multi-hyphen stuff. And so, yeah, Electropoint is what most of my handles are on social media.
I think that's great because I think what's happening is that certain art forms are trying to figure out how to stay relevant as possible. And with mm-hmm. social media, with outreach, people that have built that outreach with thousands of people, I think now those numbers really do matter. How big is an artist's personal outreach? That's going to help get jobs. That's why that's why social media actually, unfortunately, fortunately or unfortunately, does matter these days. Right. And I think people just want to stay relevant. And I think combining pop culture with other genres and the people that work in pop and is all important. And also so many pop culture icons are educated in a classical background, which mm-hmm. is why their creations are fully fleshed out ideas and creations and tell stories and and reach millions of people because they are based in, you know, fact and what will never grow old. It's kind of amazing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you, Roman, for speaking with me today and officially being a part of the Dear Multi-Hyphenate family. Thank you to the Broadway Podcast Network. Thank you to Alan, Dory, Katie, Yo. You're all fantastic. And as always, follow me on Instagram at TheMichaelKushner or at Dear Multi-Hyphenate. And if you want to be a guest on Dear Multi-Hyphenate, you could submit through DearMultiHyphenate.com or message me on Instagram. And as always, rate, comment, subscribe, do all that stuff. Download the episodes. It all helps. I'll talk to you all soon. Bye.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but
yeah.
Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.